Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
Should we go out to eat? I'm thinking about hair extensions. Ooh, that makes no sense. Stop playing with me. All right, here we go.
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh my God, this is good.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am. Yes, that's I had to call a plumber yesterday. My toilet got stuffed. I don't know what that means. For some reason, stuff didn't want to go down the toilet. I don't know how it decides that. Was it too much? Was the consistency, like, really difficult to handle? You want to hear about this at the top of a show? No. So the plumber comes over to my house and looks at my toilet and says, well, seems to be backed up. I said to myself, that's $200. That's what you do. You come in and you malign me. You insult my toilet. Fix it. Spent about 5 minutes jiggling it, and I didn't know jiggling was a repair method, and I said to myself, well, I could have jiggled it, but I guess I'm not licensed to jiggle. Now, I've jiggled things before, and it's fixed things, but I didn't think I should jiggle this. And he said, jiggling's fine. I'm jiggling. He took the thing apart and fixed the handle, and he said the chain was off, and it's a full moon, and, Aquarius and Scorpio are in alignment, and for some reason that means the toilet's not working, and I don't know. I was just so happy when he left because I had my toilet back. It's very important to me to be able to flush things out of my house. I don't like them sitting there just floating around. That's the worst part about a broken toilet. Stuff just floats around like a swimming pool. It's not pretty. Did you think that you were going to listen to this show and not hear that kind of thing? Apparently, you haven't visited this place before. This is what I do. This is what I do. I talk about things that people don't usually talk about, but it bothers everybody. I mean, broken toilets are, it's on the same level as your cell phone not working for some reason or your computer freezes. It's that same panic mode. Oh my God, how will I live now? It's that same feeling, like you leave your house and you forgot your cell phone. It's like, should I go back and get the cell phone? Of course I should. I can't live without it. It's the same thing with a toilet. I have no toilet. Yeah, but you've got other toilets in your house, don't you? If you're well off enough to have more than one toilet, isn't that okay? No, I want them all working all the time. Look, the one thing that's important is to get the shit out of my house as fast as possible. So that's crucial to me. These are panic mode things. Oh my God, one of my toilets doesn't work. I remember my first apartment. I had one toilet. I had a studio apartment. Studio apartment means you're living in one room. It's pretty much what it is. The living room, the bedroom, the kitchen, it's all one big room. It's just it's a festival of facilities in one room. The bathroom is always the one room that is separate. But there's only one. There's only one. And if your toilet... Oh, man, I have really got to get a job. President Trump announced his re-election campaign yesterday in Orlando, Florida. I suppose now it's a Disney ride. The campaign ride of death. He announced in front of an enthusiastic crowd, some of them camping out front for hours and hours before the actual rally. It was similar to getting tickets to get into Star Wars when it opened. Personally, I don't even like watch Star Wars movies, but in comparison, I would, compared to going into one of his rallies. Apparently, Donald got up in front of the crowd and just started screaming and ranting. I guess that's his act. And he actually mentioned Hillary Clinton over 20 separate times. He's running his campaign exactly as he did in 2016 because it was successful for him. He surprised everybody by winning the presidency. I'm still not sure that's the case. I still pinch myself every morning and wonder when I'm going to wake up out of this hellish nightmare. Hopefully in another year and a half. That's a long time, though. 4 years of my life have been wasted on insanity. Anyway, he's talking about Hillary Clinton's emails. I mean, Donald, that's over. And he makes a very strong campaign statement, which pisses people off to this day and proves that this is the end of the universe. He says that the Democrats want to destroy democracy. They are evil. They're out to destroy. I mean, oh my God. I mean, that's the way to bring people together, Don. That's what we want. More division. More anger, more fear, more fright, more division. What a wonderful kumbaya statement that was, Don. I mean, I've heard of presidents being like politically divisive, but this guy, man, he's doing everything that he said shouldn't be happening. He's really messing things up. He's the fuck up president. It's amazing. It's amazing. And he's going with it. He's going with the fear and division thing that he seems to think he does so well with. Here's the problem, Don. You were running against Hillary Clinton, so people were voting for you to not vote for her. This is now a flip side thing, Don. People will vote for anybody but you, except for your little customer base. And I don't know why. You've got them under your spell somehow. Did you dangle some shiny objects in front of their faces? Yeah, I think you did. I know you did. This time, Don, you're the one the people are running against. Now you have a record of an entire presidential term. You have to run on the record of fear and divisiveness. And you were going to drain the swamp. You filled it up with stuff from my toilet. That's where it should be going. I flush my toilet. It ends up in your lap. That's your problem, Don. As I've said so many times, my grandmother could run against you and win by a landslide, and my grandmother's been dead for 20 years now, and still dead. So, Don, I mean, to me, this is just going to be fun to watch. My only fear is that Trump will start some type of international incident, and there are many to choose from, in order to divert the attention. Because Don needs to be the center of attention all the time. He's like that little child that never grew up and is not capable of growing up because of a mental condition that prevents them from doing so. Anyway, I get stuck in talking about him every once in a while because that White House is such a slapstick place to be. I don't understand his relationship with Melania Trump. I don't think I can even spell her first name. I haven't met a lot of Melanias. As a matter of fact, before I knew of a Melania Trump, I thought Melania was a very serious skin disease that your dermatologist informs you about after much biopsies. I'm sorry you have Melania. Oh no! Is it curable? We don't know yet. We don't know yet. I don't understand her point. Most first ladies have some type of a thing, you know, they go out and they talk about some type of a cause. And Melania Trump's original cause was to stop bullying. I mean, is this like a joke? Is this, am I on some kind of one of those TV shows where they prank you? Melania is going across the country to talk about how horrible bullying is. You got to stop the bullying. Oh my God, turn around and look at the orange guy behind you. Well, very quickly, that whole campaign kind of came to an end because it's just, you can't stop laughing while she's doing that. Since then, Melania's pretty much not done anything except for change her clothes in the afternoon into a second outfit, like she's just gotten married, getting out of the wedding dress, and now going to the reception. Melania is nothing. And every once in a while, I kind of put myself in Melania's shoes, which are actually red high heels that I can't do it. And I'm wondering if Melania's mind, she's saying to herself, I don't love him. I'm in it for the money. Everybody knows it. So I just stand there and I shut up and I look nice because that's all Don ever wanted. He doesn't look for love or companionship or emotions or feelings. He's a cold-hearted piece of steel. He has no emotions. I'm just there for the ride. I'm the arm candy. It's my job. That's why he imported me from Middle Eastern countries and parts of Europe. I think she's a mail order bride. I think it was Amazon's first category where you got free shipping. I'm not sure. As a matter of fact, when Trump said, I'm going to send out the immigration police and deport a lot of people, he said this 2 days ago. Melania probably said to herself, uh-oh, where do I stand on that? Should I pack my bags? She's an American citizen because she married Donald Trump, but that's how close she came to being imported or deported or exported. Some ported in it. Some ported. Anyway, I don't want to talk about him anymore. I am sorry. But I'm very curious about their relationship. Not that I care. I mean, I should care because television shows tell me that I should care about everybody else's relationship except for mine. Jerry Springer, Dr. Phil, the Kardashians, the Real Housewives of whatever town or city you can think of. I'm supposed to get involved in other people's lives and completely dismiss my own, apparently. Actually, today on the show, we have a relationship expert. And this is fascinating because I don't care if you're married or not because I don't know you. But everybody who's been in a relationship for more than like a couple of weeks probably feels that, well, this is getting a little stale here. So what is it about relationships that keep us together, drive us apart? We're going to speak to an expert on that on today's show, and I know you'll be fascinated because I'm paying you to do that. No, actually, I'm not paying you. You're paying me, but you don't even realize it. That's the funny part. Mexico's paying for this show. I did some yard work yesterday. Oh my God. If you know me, you will realize this is like an incredible announcement. I don't do yard work. I don't even bend over to tie my shoes. Why bother? Velcro was invented. That's why. So people like me didn't have to bend over and tie shoes. I wear loafers. I don't know what they are, but I love the name, so I bought them. Because I loaf around. I'm a loafer. So I might as well wear shoes that are named after me. Right. Yes. Did some yard work yesterday. I trimmed the bushes. Actually, the proper term is I pruned them. And as I was doing it, I said to myself, because this is the way I think, what am I doing pruning? What about this resembles a prune in any way? I'm not cutting the bushes with a prune or any kind of fruit. Why do they call it pruning? Why am I performing an action of pruning when I'm trimming my bushes? That sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it? Hey, what'd you do yesterday? I was trimming my bushes, if you know what I mean. Were you pruning them? Oh, that's disgusting. That's disgusting. Don't talk to me like that. That's disgusting. Yeah, I pruned. I pruned for about an hour. I have no idea what I did, but I pruned. What a stupid word. Then I got out my weed whacker. I don't know what they're called, but they're weed whackers. And I whacked my weeds, man. And again, another euphemism. Spent half the day pruning myself, and then I whacked my weeds, if you know what I mean. I'm whacking them, man. I'm whacking them like an Italian mafia movie.
Hey, listen here. Here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you $10,000. What I want you to do is go to that restaurant over there, and at about 10 o'clock, there's going to be a guy sitting in the corner. I want you to go whack him. Whack him with your weed whacker. I want to whack his weeds, if you know what I mean.
I don't know. I don't know. I was whacking my weeds. I was whacking them. Like a whack-a-mole. You ever play that game at a carnival? Whack-a-mole, is that what it's called? Guacamole? I get confused. I get confused. The English language is just very, very confusing. Well, our guest joins us momentarily. I know you have a relationship of some sort, whether you're married or not, so I know this is going to be fascinating for you. I tailor things so that things are fascinating for you, because that's all I really care about. And we're going to do that right after this.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructose that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original, barbecue, or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's Preserve Piggy Parts.
Hi, Dr. DeMorneff. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today? I just asked you that, so let's move on.
It's okay. It's early. Yes. Earlier here than there.
That's true. She is the author of The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together, which is, you know, I think it's more significant now than ever before, to be honest with you. The divorce rate has been high for quite some time, but It seems that in today's world, there's a lot more stresses, and we need people to take them out on, and that's usually the person we're with, and that creates some problems.
Well, that's a very astute observation, because, of course, the person who's right next to us all the time easily becomes the scapegoat for our frustrations, and it's such a challenging thing to need to be tactful and sensitive to the person you're trying to have an intimate bond with at the same time you're trying to get some help with your anxiety and stress. So, yeah I agree.
Yeah. The divorce rate has been quite high for quite some time. And I don't think we're necessarily talking about marriage as we are about being with a significant other.
Yeah, I mean, people marry less now relative to times in the past because, you know, mores have changed in terms of, you know, living together. Certainly single parenthood has been much more acceptable in recent decades. So the book is really about long-term intimate relationships, but its principles and its ideas are really applicable to any important emotional relationship because it's really about how do you become increasingly aware of your emotions, skillful in communicating them and expressing them, finding ways to get the kind of communication that feels nourishing and satisfying and effective. And all those things are, you know, pretty complex and deep processes that bear on pretty much any important relationship that we have in life.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. It seems that in today's world of social media, that everybody seems like they're diagnosable. There's some condition that almost everybody has. We've come up with names for things that we like for every little problem we have. That now it's a condition. Have we over-conditioned ourselves to the point where we're now paranoid about ourselves?
Well, you know, I think there is this certain kind of how am I being viewed by the world, and what's the snapshot I'm getting of other people through what they're producing in the public sphere. You know, self-awareness is a good thing. Being aware of what your issues are, what your problems are, what you're contributing to relationships is very important. But a certain kind of hyper self-consciousness about what I'm doing wrong or right, I think, is actually fed by this very, you know, public and kind of self-conscious social media world that we live in. And, you know, of course, a recipe for an unhappy relationship is turning to your partner and diagnosing all their problems. So the book is really about how do you look within, how do you know yourself, how do you become self-aware of what you're doing in a given situation, which can be an incredibly powerful tool to making something better happen.
You do something in this book that I found a little bit different, which is you use real-life situations of profiles of other people. And sometimes when we see other people doing something and we recognize that we also do that, it kind of goes, oh, is that what I'm like? It's an interesting way of recognizing yourself.
Well, I am a therapist, and I've been a couple and individual therapist for almost 3 decades. And so the book is really drawing on that experience because I sit in a room with people every day in these very intimate and private situations where they're pouring their hearts out. And I think one of the problems in intimate relationships is we feel so lonely and alone in, are we normal? Is what we're doing in the normal range of suffering? You know, are we some kind of failure that we, you know, fight in this way? And I think to have a window, of course, it's all anonymous and confidential and fictionalized, but to have a window into what's the intimate life of other people? How are they struggling with this? I think can be enormously helpful to people and kind of calm them down enough to sort of look at themselves. Because I think, you know, when we're in fight or flight and we're in a fight, well, that's the last time we're going to be looking at ourselves. So this is a calm moment where you can read, you can get a window into other people's experiences in life and sort of use it as an opportunity for self-reflection.
Yeah, interesting. I guess the biggest step is to recognize who you are and to accept it, but the smaller yet larger step is how do you go about changing a habit that you've had probably all your life?
Well, right. So, you know, I say to people who come into my office, if you could have fixed this through reading a self-help book, you already would have. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's a lot of great tips mm-hmm. and tools out there. And if you're in an emotional place where you can read a book and see tips and internalize them, great. That's a great way of learning. But mm-hmm. this book is trying to go to kind of a deeper level to give people an experience. Mm-hmm. Meet them where they're at. Like, you're suffering, you're confused, you're lost, you don't know why you're having these problems, you don't understand how you're contributing, and almost lead them on a kind of emotional journey that's sort of like therapy. You know, here I am as a person who's been thinking about this stuff for 30 years, who has, I hope, some insight, who can kind of sympathize with you right where you are and kind mm-hmm. of help lead you to somewhere new. But of course, changing ourselves is difficult, and it's a lifelong effort, and we're all amateurs.
Yeah. In one sense, it's difficult to change. In another, our relationships do change, especially over a longer span of time. I know many marriages have lasted 50 years, and the question when you meet a couple like that, what's the first question you ask them? How do you do that? How is your relationship so successful? It's the first question, because we're also in awe.
Right.
It's almost like meeting a 100-year-old person saying, how did you live so long? What's the trick?
Yeah. Well, you know, and people probably usually answer that question with some version of, we kind of changed together,
or we
found a way to make room for the ways the other person was changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's always going to be a part of a long relationship, is how can we kind of ride this wave together in such a way that the changes kind of harmonize.
Yeah. Do we as humans, do we expect perfection or seek perfection? Is that a good idea?
I think for ourselves, where people tend to be extremely self-critical mm-hmm. when they're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever capacity you can develop toward yourself mm-hmm. for curiosity about your own emotional life and self-compassion
mm-hmm.
is going to pay you back tenfold in your relationships,
mm-hmm.
because I think people are often perfectionistic about other people because they're so afraid of not being perfect themselves.
Yes.
And that comes from shame, and that comes often from having grown up in a family where it wasn't okay to be human and to be imperfect and to have your struggles. I was talking to somebody in couple therapy where the woman was saying, the husband says, whenever she says, or the kids say, you know, I'm trying,
mm-hmm.
he says, trying isn't good enough. What's trying? And I thought, you know, that's exactly the opposite message for mental health, which is, of course you're always trying.
Right.
Of course you're always trying to do better or trying to understand, and that's being human. And so I'm really trying to give people permission to love themselves as fallible human beings, which we all are and always will be.
Yeah, interesting. We do a lot of projecting upon each other, don't we?
Yeah, projecting. I'm glad that's a psychological word that's entered the general vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
and probably all your listeners know what projecting is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a natural human tendency.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, early baby research says babies need to project because they basically need to put their feelings into their parent before they have words. So the parent's like, oh, I understand what you're feeling.
Yeah.
But in adulthood, if I'm married to you and I'm saying, like, you're always so selfish and you're always doing this and that, and acting as if I know what's motivating you
mm-hmm.
out of my own mind, you know, I'm saying, like, I know what you're thinking, that's always a recipe for disaster because nobody wants to be told what they're thinking.
Yeah, no question about that. It's a fascinating book, and it digs a little bit deeper than, well, a lot deeper than some of the other books of its kind. It's very interesting. It's The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together, and it doesn't really necessarily have to be marriage. It's good for any relationship that you want to nurture. It's available everywhere, I assume.
It is.
Great. And how do we follow you? Not in a stalking manner.
I'm on Twitter at Daphne DeMarneff. And then I have a website, daphnedemarneff.com. I have a long, complicated name, but if you enter some version of Daphne DeMarneff, I'm sure you'll find me.
Okay, great. Let me just spell your last name for listeners. It's D-E, and then it's M-A-R-N-E-F-F-E.
And, yes, FF is in Frank.
Excellent. Hey, it's great talking to you. I could talk to you for hours, but I'm not allowed to.
Okay, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go. There you go. It's a wonder that we coexist on this planet, isn't it? Sure, we destroy it with our toxins and our plastics and all the other stuff we do, our horrible habits on this planet. But at the same time, we coexist with other humans. That's not easy. You may say, hey, we're all the same species. We all should get along. But we don't. We don't. We've got good people. We've got evil people. And somehow we're supposed to get along because we all look the same. Yeah, maybe we look the same in a way, but some of us really suck. I mean, some of us don't really belong here. Some of us should be banished, just like Trump's immigration policy. Some of us should be removed from the planet and sent to some other galaxy. I really think that's true. Just because you're a human being doesn't make you sensitive and wonderful. That's where I part ways with the church and with some Christian philosophies, where there's a little bit of good in everybody. No, I've met a lot of people. There was no good in them at all. Not even when they were naked. There's nothing in there. They ain't good. Their heart pumps blood, but that's about it. So no. Not all humans are made equal. Some of them are made stupid. And with that, good luck with your relationship. Do you know your chosen other, your boyfriend, girlfriend, your husband, wife, whatever, is really the closest person to you for this reason? And I think I mentioned it during the interview here. We say we're so close to family. We didn't choose our family. There was no lineup. We didn't get a chance to interview them to see if they had anything in common with us. Just because someone shares the same blood as you do doesn't make you really close to them. It just makes your blood similar. And that's not enough for a relationship. What's the closest thing you have in your relationship? Blood. We have similar blood. Wow, okay. But friends and relationships, that's your choosing. That's all you. You can pick and choose. You can be a weak person and choose all these idiots to be friends with. That's up to you. But you have the ability to choose who you're going to spend your time with. Yeah, that's up to you. None of these people were forced upon you, unless you work in an office in a cubicle and the other person in the cubicle is a complete asshole. That's like family. I'm talking about friends and relationships, husbands, wives. Those are your choosing. If it didn't work out, it's because you fucked up. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.